Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Podcast, where culture meets crypto. Today, we have a model, Web3 community marketer, and NFT creator. From a small Illinois suburb to the runway shows in Paris, she has appeared in the most notable magazines, music videos, and ads for brands such as Calvin Klein, Victoria's Secret, and Dior. In 2017, she graced the cover of Playboy with a 12-page spread dubbed as The Adventure Issue. Most recently, she has taken her talents to the Web3 space, where she is set to release Chaos and Couture about the exploration and exploits of the modeling industry. Please welcome Dana Taylor. Hi, Dana. What's up? Hi.
What's up? How are you?
Good, good. Thanks. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show. You know, in and in looking up, like, you know, some about your history. So I thought a fun fact was you staged runway shows in your driveway for friends while you were growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely. So yeah, I grew up in a small town in Downers Grove, and I mean, it's like any other typical suburb anybody's ever grown up in. You know, I had like my neighbors that I would play with at a little park on the corner, super cute. But my dad was a photographer. And I actually, you know, growing up, he would just do all these photo shoots. There was all these photos around my house of all the women he had shot. So I kind of grew up, you know, just even seeing cameras. My whole life is on videotape. If you ask like, hey, when Dana was three eating a piece of pizza, can we find a clip of that? Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sure it's something in there. So it's like I've always kind of been in front of a camera naturally. And my dad even put me up for Pampers when I was little. And I was like the runner up for Pampers when I was a baby. And then on and off until like age three, he would be like, oh, if we have a calendar, something coming up, Dana, you should go in it. And so, you know, they'd bring me on set and I was 3 years old and they're like, try on these 8 pairs of jeans. And I'd be like, I don't want to. And I'd start like running around set like a little psycho. And then he's like, maybe this isn't for her. So over time, I like really, really wanted to model, you know, being in like my dad's studio was really cool. He like, we got to drive all the way to the city of Chicago. It's only like 45 minutes from Downers Grove. But it was always like such a trip and an adventure being a little kid, like going into dad's studios. And then like, even in my dad's, in our basement growing up, we had all of the photos he had taken of all these women on the wall. And my mom even did some modeling for him back in the day. I don't know what they were doing there, but there's a photo of her legs and heels right over his computer, like his main monitor, my whole life growing up. And at one point, I think it was in our living room. And I was like, this is so weird. But yeah, I mean, we're definitely like an artsy family.
Right. And well, that, I mean, that's awesome. You know, like, it's funny that you say that, like, you've been in front of a camera your whole life. Because I think one of the things for me is, like, I've just been getting used to being in front of the camera. Like, it doesn't come naturally to me. And so that's why sometimes when I have friends that are like, you know, naturally like, yep, strike a pose. And like, it's super, super natural for them. And it's like, you know, I think it really speaks volumes to you and being comfortable with yourself and, you know, how your modeling career ended up starting, right? Like talk a little bit about that, what that was like. How did you end up becoming a professional model?
So I wanted to be a model my whole life. And I, you know, I didn't always look like this. It took me a long time to come into my body. I was born like smashed in the birth canal and my mouth was like this. So over time, I had to go to physical therapy. I had headgear. I had braces since I was like 8. I had expanders, you know. I was also like really, so I'm 5'11". And I'm really, really, really skinny. Like genetically, I just looked like some weird, you know, those things in the car wash that look like that.
Oh, yes.
Like that's kind of how I like walked around as a kid. I was just like all floppy and long and skinny.
But do you dance like that? I don't know if you've seen that.
Sure. Episode. I'm in the club. I'll be like, whatever. I don't care. The things I do when I go out dancing, my fiance is just like, I'm just going to look at you. Because I don't know. I've become very comfortable with myself. But yeah, so growing up, it was like, I wanted to be a model, but I didn't know if I had the ability to in the visual sense. And so I started trying to like do my own photo shoots as I was going into like middle school. And I tried to kind of like, you know, I would go through magazines and take pictures out and put them all over my walls in my room. And I created like a collage for myself. Of just like inspiration. And so I would then do like photo shoots over them with my girlfriends. We would do our hair, our makeup, or each other's hair and makeup. and just, you know, start getting like, I started getting that like creative outlet going that, you know, my dad had. And also my sister is really, really into photography. She was taking classes in high school for photography, and, you know, obviously my dad had all the cameras, so she kind of just had like an easy available moment to do that. And I would like model for all of her school projects, which was really fun. So I was like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of starting to model now. And then, like you said, the runway shows in my driveway, I would get 4 or 5 friends. I would hold up a piece of paper in front of the camera. I said like, boho chic. And then I would put it down, and then we would run over around my house to like come up all in front of my driveway and do the walk, and then walk back and then hide. And then I would edit them. I got like really into iMovie and stuff, and I got a Mac, and I would edit all these runway shows and like give them to the people that were in it. And I was like, I love this. I want to be a model and a video editor. And it was like right there then and there, I was like, this is my calling. This is what I'm going to do. And I just kind of like got really, really, really into it, in the idea that like, maybe this could work. Like I kind of started like sprouting, you know, I was filling into my body. My face wasn't sideways anymore. I didn't need the social validation as much anymore, because I realized like growing into myself, this is just what I am. And I kind of never changed the way I acted, even when I was bullied, because I was just like, I don't know, like, this is how I am. I don't know why people don't like me, whatever. Oh my God, I actually forgot to tell you a good story. So I'm just going to keep talking and talking. I have a lot to tell you today. So me and my sister actually got our names because my dad would have castings, meaning like a bunch of models would come to his studio and they would, you know, bring their like portfolio card, which is like a comp card and it has your name on it. But he would like collect them over time, because you're like, hey, maybe I wanted Emma from Ford one day again or whatever. So he would, you know, he had the stacks of them, and he was like going through them for our baby names actually. And that's how him and his, my mom picked me and my sister's name, is through like a stack of model cards, which is kind of cool.
But were they picking? Were they picking based just on names? Were they picking based on names, or were they like, oh, like, you know, oh, I had a good memory with this. Yeah.
No, they were picking based off names. They were okay. Like, you know, there are like baby books and stuff, but he just had a book of like all of the comp cards and was like, there's some weird names in here. It could be cool.
All right. No, that, I mean, that's a really cool, interesting story. I think it's always fun and interesting to find out how people's names came about. Like, you know, sadly, my parents did not name me G Money, so this was not a baby name that was given to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it was.
Who would have thought? I know most people were probably wondering whether it was really my name or not.
It was baby money. Yes. Exactly.
And
then you became as you grew up.
So when you got into the space, right? Like when you started modeling, how old were you, and what were your first experiences like in the industry?
So my dad brought me into an agency, and I went with Ford in Chicago, and they were cool, and they offered me a contract like right there on the spot. And I was like, this seems like too easy. This is exciting. Like, will he let me do it? So then he's like, you can't just go to one. You have to like see your options. So I went to Elite. I went to another agency. They offered me a contract also. So I was like, oh my God. I was like, I want to say yes right now. And he's like, Dana, you got to play the gate. Like, you got to let them come up to you. And I was like, okay, but I just want to be a model right now. So he actually made me do like a photo shoot with him. And I was like excited, but at the same time, you know, it's like, it's not smiling for a family photo. You're in front of your dad and you're like,
Right.
But like, we're also like, I'm like Lithuanian, you know, we grew up like, we're very European, but also like very comfortable. But that was like a new kind of vibe. I don't think I was gonna be like modeling at 15 for my dad. So he took some photos of me, and you know, we emailed them into the agencies to like get the conversation going again after we'd left, like the waiting game. And they're like, yes, for sure, for sure. And I was really interested in Ford. They were cool. With the other agency, there was some weird like stipulations.
Was there a reason you liked Ford over Elite? I mean, I don't know really the difference between the both. I just consider them on the same level. But like, what were like, I guess, some of the differences that you liked one over the other?
So at Ford, they would let you do print work and runway. And print is like commercial stuff, magazines, anything you see online, and runway is just, runway. But at Elite, they wanted you to pick either runway or print at the time. And I was like, well, that's just like half the work when you could, have both options in front of you. It makes so much more sense. So just like that component kind of just automatically cut out one of the agencies for me, which made it easy because I'm an indecisive person. I'm an indecisive person, so thank God. And I waited like a week after I sent them those photos, and then I got a call, and it was for New York. And Chicago was like, you have to get this girl assigned. So they called New York, and they're like, New York, you have to call Dana Taylor and tell them like we're interested too eventually. So I'm this 15-year-old girl, and I'm in Chicago, and I'm just starting to think about being a model. And I have like a New York agency calling me saying, we're so interested. We want you on our team too. Please sign with us so we can like create a future. And I'm like, literally goosebumps. I'm crying. I'm like, a New York agency wants me now. Like, what? I think I was like a freshman. How old are you when you're 15? Sophomore? I think I was. So I'm like younger for my grade, but it's like a sophomore. I just turned 15 in the summer. It's like all like literally overnight. Now there's this discussion of maybe I could go to New York. But my parents are like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're in high school. Slow down. So I decided to sign with Ford in the end, which is cool. And I met the whole team. Everybody's really cool at that time. So I'm kind of like a light brown hair. I had like those side bangs, because I'm born in like the really early 90s. I had those like side bangs, and I would scrunch my hair like the girls did and wear a belt over my shirt with like four tank tops. And I would like show up to my agency like that, and they're like, this, like, you're cute, but it's time to like turn you into a woman. And so then a lot of people don't know that they kind of, I'm sure if you've seen America's Next Top Model, you know this, they kind of like groom you into like physically, like they're like, we should color your hair, you should, let's kind of change your style and do, they kind of like guide you into the right position because you're a kid and you think chunky blonde highlights are cool at the time, like whatever was the trend. If you're looking like Sporty Spice or Scary Spice, and that's cool for you in the moment. But so they kind of like helped revamp my look and stuff, and I go back to school. I think I'm like, hey, I signed with a modeling agency. I'm looking all cute. But they're like, my parents were like, you have to finish high school, which I always expected. Growing up, my family is very education first, and then you can go get a job. But your job growing up is school, number one. So I went to my principal, and I was like, how can I do photo shoots because they have to take place during the day and be in high school? And he's like, well, Denise Richards went here and look at how she is now. And I was like, okay, he's really throwing this Denise Richards thing around a lot. Like, does that mean like he's gonna like hold me to that standard? I don't know. But anyway, there ended up being a program that I could do in high school where I could go to school till like 12:30. Only like my junior and senior year. I went to school from 8 to 12:30, and then I got credits for my job actually, and it was called like a work program. So that next year I joined this work program, and I was still getting like, some of the kids in school were like, oh, she's a model, she thinks she's cool or whatever, and I was still just like weird me wearing hoodies to high school, being all awkward. Like, it wasn't like it didn't set into me. Like, it just felt like I got a job. And I ended up shooting a McDonald's campaign in Chicago. And then I think it was literally all over every bus in the city, all over billboards. Everybody was texting it to me. I was so embarrassed. Not because it was McDonald's, just because I was like, I really felt like that was my job and what I do. And like, I've always felt like that. Like, your work is what you do, it's not who you are. So I don't really like to combine those in the sense that I'm like, well, I'm a model. It's just like, it's something that I'm, that's been brought into my life and I'm grateful for it and I'm good at it. And like, we work together. So this McDonald's campaign was everywhere. And I was just like embarrassed, and everybody was like, oh, you think you're so cool with this McDonald's campaign. And so then, like, I was in this work program class, And my mom starts emailing my teacher in all of these videos of like the news clips I had done to put up in front of like all of her work program classes. And I was like, this is my freaking nightmare. So I'm like, all of these kids who are already pissed that I'm leaving school early to go to photo shoots, and they're like, why are you gonna do that? All of my stuff is just being put on blast, and I'm just like red in the face. I'm like, I wish I never told my mom that people saw my McDonald's stuff, because I was so anxious and nervous. And actually, there's this one girl, she's my best friend now, but she like was in the back row of the class. She was like, I hate Dana, she's stupid, she gets to leave early, whatever, whatever. She's my best friend now, and she's like, I used to talk so much shit about you back then. But it's funny how it all comes around.
So was this like, was this McDonald's campaign was really what like kind of kickstarted your career, or was it like something after that
or before? So I would say kind of what kickstarted me was I flew to New York to meet agencies actually when I was the next year when I was 16. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I started doing a lot in Chicago. I started shooting some editorial stuff. Chicago is like a good market, but it's not the best for fashion. And no, my agency was really like, we can see you being like a runway girl. Like, you're just tall and long. Like, this could be perfect for you. So we started kind of researching the idea of New York. And I flew to New York with my mom for like 2 days, maybe one day. Like, I think I flew in the morning, like a 6 a.m. thing. Got off, went to meet an agency. I met Ford because they have like rights over me. If you're signed with an agency, then you have to like, they have first picks on you for all the other like areas. So if Ford's in New York and Chicago and Miami and LA, they get like first dibs. And if you don't have that connection, they don't want you, then you know, you can go and see another agency. So I flew out to New York and I met with Ford and IMG, I think Elite also here. And I just did all those meetings and I ended up signing with IMG at 16 years old. And again, my parents were like, you gotta finish high school. But like, to me, I'm like, I last year just signed with Ford. This year, I'm now a New York model.
So that's like, does that mean you're living in New York full time at that point?
No. I wish.
But you're traveling.
No.
So you're traveling from LA. From Chicago to New York for shoots and stuff.
So they wouldn't even let me do that. My parents are like, no, you're not moving to New York until you're 18. And I was like, okay, so they were really cool, this agency. They let me like stay signed. And I turned 17 my senior year. I graduated early because I wanted to just leave and go model. So I graduated early. It was like December, graduated instead of the end of the year. I finished out what I needed to. I had my birthday, and the day after I turned 18, I moved to New York City. And I started my work with IMG. But what I didn't know that was coming is like all the crazy things that come with New York being like an 18-year-old girl. So I signed with IMG, and I'm not sure if people, you guys know the movie, you know the movie Zoolander, right?
Yeah, I mean, Zoolander is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like that's a great question. How real is Zoolander?
There's some realism to it, because it's like, you know how there's like a bunch of dudes in an apartment?
Yeah, like there has to be more to life than being really, really ridiculously good looking, right?
Really, 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 really. But like those model apartments are real, and I didn't really think about it, but in that movie they look really nice. So IMG sets me up in their model's apartment, and it's 4 bunk beds, 1 room, 1 bathroom. We're paying $2,000 a month, and I'm like, okay.
Like the grind is real.
Is this me making it? Like, what do I have ahead? And like the price to live there. Thankfully when I was there, it wasn't at full capacity. So it was the underage apartment. Oh my gosh, what year was this? 2009, 2010?
Oh, okay. So it was like right after like the financial crisis. Yeah, like the city was like pretty empty at that point.
Yeah, it was like 2010. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna say that. So I stayed in this apartment. Thank God it wasn't at like full capacity, because it's like 8 girls, and then sometimes there's a couch, so it's 9, and then, you know, it's like just overpacked and it's gross. And like, you have a meeting, like you have to wake up like an hour and a half before just to try to get in the bathroom, at least to like get your 15 minutes in the bathroom. It's like, it's a fight. But yeah, after I left, there was actually some girls who started sabotaging other girls in the apartment. Like one girl put hair in the other girl's shampoo and all of her hair fell out. And then what? I was like so scared. Yeah.
Holy shit.
They were like trying to like hurt the other models.
It's funny because I think on the outside looking in, you have, you know, this expectation of what like being a model is like, and like flying to all these amazing locations and photo shoots and doing all this cool shit. Like, how did the reality of that stack up to what your expectations were, you know, going in?
I mean, there's like a couple stories I'm going to get to that are like, wow, this is really cool. This is what you get for being a model. And then, wow, this is really shit. Like, you know, the price to live there was $2,000. It's 8 girls in one bedroom. It's gross. There was mice in that one apartment. That's what I remember. That's the first time I saw like a rodent.
I mean, 8 girls.
An apartment, because you know, that's normalizing.
8 girls in one bedroom is like insane, and you're each paying $2,000. Wow, I mean that sounds like a profit center for the modeling agency or whoever runs the apartment, I guess.
Oh yeah, so like they completely profited off of us because they owned the apartment, which I like later found out.
Wow, and I mean I guess like that's one of those things like you don't know, right? Like I would have never guessed that. Is that a practice that happens to this day?
It does. It still does. Like agencies buy apartments. They stuff them in with the out-of-town girls because a lot of times being a model, you only travel to a place for like a week or 2 weeks, and they'll be like, oh, you don't have to book a hotel. Our agency has an apartment here, you guys. So, you know, they kind of use their benefit out of that. But then also being a model who had no money and just moved to New York, they added it to my account. So
it was money it was like money against future.
Yeah, so I owed them money. So I had this $2,000 bill straight into moving into New York, and I owed them money. So if I were to get a job, I wouldn't even get the money. But they were allowed to give you cash advances, but then they charged 20% or 25% on the cash advances. So it's kind of like if I get $100, I get to pay you back $125, you know?
So wow. That's crazy. Years. I didn't even know that happened. I didn't even realize that was a thing. And I'm sure a lot of people didn't know that. That sounds like
there's a lot of things. It's kind of like unspoken to kind of say like, because a lot of people want to see this as like a really glamorous type of lifestyle. But like we have to pay for a website to be on a website and to hold our portfolio. We have to pay like $40 a month. Every time we give like a card with our name on it, it's $1.50 a card or something, $1 a card. So we like, pay for those.
For like a business card?
Yeah, for a business card, we pay for those, which is okay. The business
Wait, but
card.
$1.50? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
We pay for any prints that are put into our physical portfolio. We have to pay for that. We have to pay if a client wants the book. Like, say you're like, oh, I want to see Dana's book, but I don't want it online. Like they would FedEx it overnight, that would come out of our pocket because the client just didn't want to go online and look at our portfolio. So there's like a lot of other charges that, you know, we do incorporate as, you know, a model, but also it was helpful at the time, not having a lot of money, them paying my rent until I could. So in the beginning, that was good.
But like, I mean, it's helpful for sure. But like, I mean, charging you 20-25% interest rates, it sounds like insanely egregious. Yeah, like that.
I never took out cash. I was thankful that I was a working model in Chicago, so I had like some savings coming in, and I never took cash out. I was like, nope, I refuse. I'm not paying.
Yeah, I mean, those are like exploitative credit card practices. Like, I mean, I didn't know any of these practices took place, like literally until you just started mentioning them. But this to me, it's funny because it sounds a lot to me very similar to the like the art industry, right? Like the normal like art industry, which obviously has been disrupted tremendously because of NFTs and even like the music industry, right? Like this is, but like I don't know, maybe because let's say like the model industry as a whole is probably like smaller in terms of like compared to like artists and like musicians, that you don't hear about this all that much, or maybe people discount it because they're like, oh, but like you're a model, so like life is easy. Yeah, like this is the first I've ever heard of stuff like this.
Yeah, I mean, life was weird. Like, my second model apartment I moved into, it was an amazing Gramercy, like 2-floor apartment. There was four of us in it, but it was $3,300 a month. And I slept in like, it was a one bedroom, and then the basement had like two beds in it. And I slept in the queen bed, but I didn't know, cause like I set up all my stuff. And then the girl's like, yeah, my agency told me we have to share the bed for the next few months. And I was like, what?
Wow.
What? Like we have to share a bed and I'm paying $3,300.
So, wow. Like, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, it's a weird transition when you first come into the city and don't know what's going on, and it was definitely weird. And then, you know, I started working. I met with my agency. They loved me. They're like, "You're a fashion girl now," and I was like, "Okay, fashion girl. What the fuck does that mean?" So I started going to like castings and meeting people, and I kind of got lucky and I took off right away because Calvin Klein booked me as an exclusive in New York for Fashion Week. So an exclusive is where they pay me not to do any other show. They're like, we only want you, you're gonna only walk in our show. So it's kind of a big deal, and it really like launches you forward for the next seasons coming. And so you start in New York and then you go to London, then you go to Milan, and then you go to Paris. So it kind of like, oh, who's this girl? She was an exclusive. So after that New York, I walked with Karlie Kloss in front of me and was like, I'm going to have a heart attack. You know, she's a Victoria's Secret model. She's the girl who does all the Express campaigns. She married to Jared Kushner, but
I don't know.
Married to Jared. Yeah, I think so. But she's like had a crazy, crazy career. And she was literally right in front of me on my first runway show. So that was like my first starstruck moment. And I was like, how did I get here when last year I was just living in Dallas, bro? And then they're like, yeah, tomorrow you're flying to London. I was like, I've never been to London. I'm going to London? So I fly to London and I do all my castings and everything's awesome. I fly to Paris. I go to Milan. But the thing is, like, they still put you up in these, like, weird little apartments that are, like, hostel style but with, like, a little kitchen. And one of them, I was with, like, this 15-year-old girl from Russia. Didn't speak English, was completely confused what she was doing, where she was. And I was just like, how is this legal? Like, she didn't even know how to get around. She didn't know, I don't know, this poor girl. It was so sad. And I'm like, she is 15 years old on her own in this industry that is like money grabbing from people, like to stay in these places. She has no idea. And we have to pay for our flights. So like when we get booked for these like runway shows, we're still paying to fly ourselves there. We're still paying for our hotels.
Oh, wow.
We're paying for all the accommodations.
I didn't realize that you had to pay for that out of pocket.
Unless it's a direct job, like say H&M books me and they're going to be shooting in Spain, then they'll pay that. But if it's an opportunity for me and it's like something that I'm going to go try out for, I have to pay to do it. So I'm paying for these hotels. So I'm in London, Milan, Paris, and I end my runway season in Paris. And I literally booked Dior, Dolce & Gabbana, JW Anderson, Atem, which is like Victoria's Secret of Paris. I think I did 45 shows or something my first season, and it was amazing. Like, it was the biggest rush I'd ever done, but like, it's also kind of exhausting because you have to wake up at 6 a.m. to start running around the city. And back then there were no like iPhones where you just type in the thing. They would be like, here's a map. And I'd unfold it every day. And I'd put little post-it notes where all my castings were. And I slowly would rip them off one by one after doing one meeting and figure out what train to get to. And like I was just like, I don't know. I do not know how I did that without an iPhone telling me where to go. Thank God I survived. Right.
Yeah. I mean, So I want to talk about kind of like what led you into Web3, and you know, you were having a hard time with IMG, and I think you've spoken about that before. So like, what exactly happened there?
I got transitioned into a new agent, and I think like there were some inconsistencies. People were saying my hips were a half an inch bigger here and there because you have to be like a certain exact size. And he was having some feedback from clients, and I'm like, it's a half inch. Like, you know, they could have just measured me in a different place. And he was always telling me, I don't want to like name the agent or anything, but like, he was like, your arms are fat. And I'm like, there was always something. And I'm like, what's going on? And then he got Gigi Hadid. And I was like, love that girl. She's amazing. Nothing against her. But, you know, it took up a lot of my time from, you know, she took up a lot of time from him for me. And one day I had a friend who was a photographer, and he was like, hey, you didn't come to that casting. I was like, what casting? He's like, we were casting for a Maybelline contract and you didn't come. We waited for like 2 hours. Maybelline's pissed. You're going to get blacklisted for them. You're an idiot. And I was like, I never got the meeting. So my agency like purposely didn't send it because it was against me and Gigi. So she just like got it out of me not going. So there's like a lot of those things. And I was like, I'm not happy with my representation. So I switched, and you know, I kind of like took a little hiatus, and I kind of started going crazy and partying, and I started seeing some of the perks of modeling. And I was definitely that girl that went to St. Bart's with Leonardo DiCaprio and was on his yacht for whatever. And he was a good friend of mine. And, you know, I was in St. Bart's, and there was all these amazing people and beautiful celebrities. And I mean, I've seen some crazy things. There's girls, I've gone on trips, and there's girls there, you know, that are prostitutes, and I'm pretty sure that agencies set them up to do that, and they're getting paid by the day to just whoever comes up and do whatever, and they're big models. And I was like, what the hell is going on? So there's all this darkness that's starting to come out of the industry and stuff. And I had like amazing opportunities. You know, Leo was a great friend of mine. We had a little bit of falling out, you know, whatever, it's cool, like misunderstandings, but he's still a great person. He introduced me to a guy I was dating, Bradley. I was dating Bradley Cooper for a while, and that was amazing. And he just like walked in and these like weird sneakers, and he was just like an awkward, funny, weird dude like I was, and we got along really, really well. And I think he was shooting American Sniper at the time I had met him, because I was like, is he wearing rock climbing shoes? Like, he was weird. But I started being around all of these, you know, as I like started getting the buzz of the career and being sent to these parties, you're like surrounded by like all these celebrities and stuff. And there's like some good things that happen and some bad things that happen. And, you know, like I was once giving a massage on vacation, and we were at a party and they had masseuses, and Russell Simmons, I was laying on my back, just comes up and kisses me. And I didn't even know who this man was. And he just like attacked my face. And I know he's been like me too. And I'm like, now I get it. So there's like this weird world where this celebrity world and this model world collide. And so I kind of was like, I'm not really comfortable with all this. I need to go back to work. Stopped partying, stopped being around all that. It was just like too much. It was a little uncomfortable. You know, I dated celebrities. I'd been to the yachts. I did the party. And I, you know, I got into a serious relationship, and I wanted to work. And so I started doing more like commercial work, and I ended up shooting Playboy in the Bahamas, and that was awesome. And then I moved into catalog modeling because I didn't really want to do like the runway stuff. I wanted to not be so skinny anymore. I started doing like La Mer. I tried to
What was the reason? What was the reason you wanted to stop doing runway? Just because...
They just had these expectations for your body that as you get older and you're a woman, you can't keep. Like, I'm still a tiny, tiny person. And they always were like, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. And it just, it's not what I wanted to do. And I wasn't making that much money. Like, the money in the end is in the catalog work.
Oh, really?
So I got lucky.
Is that because there's more scale, I guess, with catalog work?
Well, I got paid $150 to shoot Vogue. That's like a big thing because like anybody will do it. Oh, it's Vogue. He was $150 right. bucks. He did it. So, when you're in this editorial world, the rates are really low, but anybody and everybody wants that exposure.
Right.
You know, and I didn't even think about not owning my own photos. And when I shot Playboy, it was amazing. It was great. It was such a good transition. They bought the photos for me for $3,000 for my life rights. And I was like, I don't regret it. I don't care. It was like the best transition for my career at the time, but knowing like I didn't own my own photos is weird, because I even actually tried to print out a hoodie with my photo on it and they said it was copyright infringement. And I was like, but it's me.
Wow, picture. Even were you trying to sell it, or was it just like for you to wear?
I just wanted it for myself.
Right.
You know? Like I didn't need to sell it. I just wanted it for myself, because like they had been selling some shirts with my face on it, and I got one and I didn't get the other. And I was like, oh, I'll just make it, you know, go on Hobby Lobby and print or paper or whatever.
How long ago was it?
18.
Okay.
And so I started kind of, you know, after Playboy, things got a little weird again. I hit this like kind of plateau in my career. After things were good, I was doing La Mer. I was shooting music videos. I just started doing some acting and things were really fun. And then, you know, I kind of hit a weird plateau and I was in a relationship and I put my relationship over work a little bit. Work slowed down. There was like a lot of weird time in between, and I was, you know, me and that agency left and I was bouncing between agencies, and I finally found one, and then I was working again and I was making money and I was doing everything I wanted in the pandemic. So now that this pandemic hit, I'm like, all right, what am I going to do with my life? You know, I met a man right before it. I was starting to like fall in love, and like, that's all I was thinking about. I was like, whatever, I'm going to like, honestly, I'm going to eat whatever I want now. No one can tell me anything. And I'm going to like sit on my couch and watch Tiger King. And you know, it's time off work. Fuck it. Let's have fun.
Right.
And my fiance, you know, I ended up falling in love and I am now engaged.
Congratulations.
From the pandemic.
Congratulations. That's a good love story from the pandemic.
I know it is. And his best friend kept calling me. He's like, you guys got to check out these NFT things. And I was like, okay, whatever. I'm too busy. Like, getting drunk and like drinking wine and, you know, falling in love with my person. I don't care about a picture online. I don't know what you're talking about. And so he kept saying, you got to check this out. You got to check this out. You got to check this out. And I was like, I'm not convinced. But my fiance was like, okay, wait, hold on. Let me check these out. And he kind of started getting into them. And, you know, all the New York apartments are really small. We're in like a small one bedroom. So I start hearing him talk about these things consistently that are like NFTs. I'm like starting to learn about them. I'm hearing the conversations. I'm asking questions, and I start getting interested in the end, because I'm like, well, you bought a photo for $1,000, you sold for $900. Like, what are you, what? And then I started like, you know, I got into researching them, and I ended up buying a Beeple, a pack, a Blau. I was into Mad Dog Jones, you know, Mika Johnson. And
I mean, it sounds like you were really early. You were when was this? You were really early for this.
Yeah, this is like the beginning of the pandemic. So I was like 2019 when I kind of started learning about them.
Right.
And I'd say by 2020, I was like starting to buy. And that just this past year, 2021, I really like dove into the space, because I was still kind of like afar and learning. And, you know, it was really intimidating. It's like learning a new language. I like to tell people that don't know what it is. Like, you really have to do your research. And in like 2019, I was like, I just want to watch TV and get fat right now. Like, leave me alone. So in 2020, I really started looking, and like the Bored Ape stuff came out. Or was that 2021?
Bored Apes. 2021.
Came out. And that was like the first big drop that I remember that I was like, I kick myself for that one. I'm like, I'm not going to spend that much money. Why would I do that? That's so stupid. But then like its community grew and everything grew. So I got into Doodles, and I love Doodles. They're amazing. They're my people. Shout out Doodle people. And
how many Doodles do you have? I'm sorry?
Two or three now. Three.
All right, nice.
But I have a rainbow puke. I call it pukey face, and they're like, it's a rainbow puke face, damn. And it's like my prized possession, and I love it. And, you know, Doodles really got me on the Twitter space, the spaces, and like really into Twitter, because I've only been on Twitter now for about 8 months, 5 months, something like that, like nothing crazy.
Right.
And I kind of realized as I was going through Twitter, there's no photography in this space until recently, because I didn't know about Justin Aversano. And this was like a year ago or whatever. And only back then I started thinking, like, that's like, I wish there was. I think it could be really cool for my industry. And I kind of like hit this final mental straw, because COVID was, it's 2021. I was working again with an agency. I went on this job and it was like the shittiest job, low pay. I had to fly out of town. The client made me stay in like their house with them, so they wouldn't pay for a hotel. Like the conditions were bad. It was like no money. There was like no bathroom on set at one point. I had to pee on a tree. I got COVID from it. And I came home and I was like so fucking pissed off. And I'm like, no one is fighting for me. No one's fighting for my rights. I'm an independent contractor. I got COVID, so I'm sitting in my room. And all through COVID, I had been like journaling and diarying. And I always kind of like had been writing my experiences through life and stuff. And I'm like, I want to do something with this. I want to share. I want other girls to connect, other people to understand what my life is like, what the industry is like. And then I kind of made that instant decision, like, I want to tell my story as an NFT. And I felt like the only way I could do that is to, you know, cancel all my modeling contracts, because number one, agencies do take 20%. And it wasn't about that, but it was about like, I didn't want them having any control or say, like, I want to be able to like tell everything that happened, all the shit. And like, if they feel like they have some control over that, like, I don't want anything to do with that then. I want to take full control of my career. I want to own my photos. I want to own my art. So I started taking like all of my, like just literally everything I scribble in my journal, like this job sucked. What happened there? You know, just like all these reflections throughout the years. And
hello?
I was like, I want to make this into a story. And then I started researching photography NFT, and I was like, there's not a lot of model. I think there's like one, two other models in the space at that time. Some girls start releasing like the DAO photos, and they're, you know, some people are doing like sexy photography and everything. And I'm like, okay, so photography is now in the space. What can I do to tell my story and use NFT photography for that? And I decided to take everything I've written in my journal, like those little notes, the little poems I've written, all my little doodles, and, you know, kind of put it all into one and create a story. And it's kind of like just my journey. Part of it's like a tell-all for me. And it's kind of like my therapy session in photos. Is what I didn't realize that would happen, but it's been like really healing to just be like, I'm a model with anxiety and depression in this industry, and people don't give a fuck about that. I'm a model who's dealing with, you know, sexual harassments. I'm a model dealing with all these things. And girls are so scared that they're going to get blacklisted for talking about these things. Kind of is the main concept of why we don't say them, because you talk shit about a client, they're going to hear and they're going to be like, okay, bye. Mm-hmm. If you say, I don't want to shoot Vogue anymore because they shot me for $150, they're going to be like, then don't. Fuck off. Bye. You know, like right away, you will just get shoved to the side because any other girl will do it. So I just kind of wanted to tell my story, share, inspire other women. First of all, other women to get in the space, because there's not a lot. I mean, slowly it's growing, but like, it's, I want to bring other women in the
space. So like, no, I totally agree with you. And I know we've had that conversation, you know, mm-hmm. before, like the first time we spoke is, you know, there could definitely be a lot more that can be done to bring more women into the space. But sometimes I feel like people are a little too harsh. It's like, I do think that, you know, it's opening up, right? And like people are open to bringing women into the space, but there's still a lot more work to be done. But like, it's not just negative. Cause I know a lot of times crypto gets a bad rap. But you know, like that's why like I'm super intrigued. Yeah, it is, right? It can be, right? And I think it's interesting because you mentioned like while you were growing up, you hung out with like the boys in your neighborhood, right? And like, cause you got along better with them. And it's like, maybe that probably like equipped you a little better to make the space a little less intimidating.
Yeah, the bros in the space. I love like pouring myself a glass of wine and going on like these doodles chats or the live spaces and like kind of just like talking shit to each other. And like, we're all talking about what glass of wine we have or what we're doing through the day. You know, it's kind of like it's a good feeling to like, it's a different kind of support system. And like, it was nerve wracking at first, but once you find your like community and your people, it's like, it's fun. And my fiance is like, I'm jealous of like you and all the rainbow doodles. Like you guys have your own chat and all your brands look so fun. And I'm like, sorry, not your space, mine.
Yeah. So I guess tell us a little bit about the drop. Like how many, what's the collection going to be like? How big? What is it? What can holders expect from, you know, from the purchase of one of the pieces?
So going into this, I, number one, did not know how much time it was going to take to do all of these photos. So I'm still like unsure of my collection because I still have one or two to finish, to be honest. And, you know, I'm not talking like price or quantities yet because I'm just still finishing the whole project. And then once I kind of put everything down, see my, you know, all of my art, I will decide price and quantities. But I do think it's really important to share a physical aspect. Like, I want to do like in some sort of a way a printout of it, like a museum quality print in like a nice little box. You have like the NFT bot. And then I'd like to like incorporate some of the actual illustrations and put that in there so you can maybe, you know, see the process of how it happened. And I mean, they're just like scribbles and doodles and like notes and poems and stuff. But, you know, I really want someone who's going to be a holder to feel like they have like an authentic piece.
Right. Yeah. And I guess that sounds really cool. And how do you plan on engaging with the community and connecting with your community as you go forward?
I mean, I'm opening a website to do this drop through. I guess I should have included that. Yeah. And then I'm going to just keep talking through Twitter, and I'm about to go on a big rant on Twitter and Discord. And as this project moves forward to like be released, I'm going to be on Discord way harder. I'm going to do I have a lot of Twitter spaces coming up with some collaborations, which is really, really, really cool. I have some good PR stuff coming up. So like slowly as it rolls out, I think it'll be out. What's the date today? I would say like the end of this month, beginning of next month. And I'm also really excited to, if I'm not ready, I'm going to do it post NFT NYC. And that's also like a really fun place, you know, to like talk about your project then too. So maybe if it's close to that, use that as a good collaboration tool on top of it. But Chaos and Couture has just like become my life. It's my story. I want to share my journey with people. I want people to relate. I know it's like it's become photography and art in one. And I know coming into the space as a woman and a model, I've had a lot of backlash. And I think I've kind of started to prove myself that, you know, I'm here and I'm here to stay. And my life's full of chaos and couture.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing the story of, you know, your life growing up and what it was like being a model in, you know, the competitive industry. Because I think like for me, it was definitely eye opening because I would have never imagined. Like, I feel like I've heard some of those stories through the grapevine, but I never imagined that it was exactly like that, right?
So I have so many more I could have told you. We'll have to save that for another time.
Yeah, I think it makes for a juicy second appearance when you come on. Thank you for taking the time to come on. I appreciate it. Yeah, so where can people go to find out more about you and the project?
So my Twitter is the best place to find out about the project. There'll be updates, photos, everything. I'm consistently on it every day. And then I am creating a website. It'll be danataylor.io. And it'll have a link for my email on there. So I'm always open to collaborations. And I'm sending out more things on the website every day and on Twitter. So just stay tuned for more. I'm really excited. It should be done soon.
Awesome. And then before I let you go, one last question. What's your favorite NFT?
I'm sorry?
What's your favorite NFT?
Ooh, I mean, my rainbow pukey doodle. It's like,
okay. All right.
I love it.
So, all right, cool. That makes total sense. Well, Dana, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm looking forward to your drop.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Great talking to you too. And thanks everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next week.